Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. We are.
Oh, art.
So still doing the Monday Night Hearts, folks. Join us for that. Now, no show, but still posting on Mondays our work on heart-related designs. So I'm working on Gayan's Purple Mountain Majesty, and you're working on that Amber Waves of Grain. That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yes, and putting those little French knots into the little bushes was fun.
No, it wasn't.
Actually, it was. It was fun.
That's a cute little house sitting there that she created. Yeah.
Yeah.
So post on Mondays. You can post any time, but the target is Mondays to stitch on heart-related pieces. Or if you don't have a heart-related piece to stitch on, but your heart beats, then that counts too. And so the hashtag is FTMondayHearts, FTMondayHearts. And that way we share what people are working on Mondays. And tonight we have another of the tours with April at the Embroiderers Guild Galleries. Jillian Benke is the artist. And so that's tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the YouTube channel. Fascinating work that she does. So April's going to give us a tour, and still do not know, probably be a last-minute thing, whether the whether Jillian can join us, the artist can join us, because when we do it at 8 o'clock on, in the evening on Wednesday night, that's the middle of the work day on Thursday in Australia. So not always easy to get April. That's her job, is to be there, but to get the artist there, not always easy. So we hope to have the artist with us, but if not, April as the curator will do a magnificent job, we know. So don't miss that.
It'll be excellent.
Yes.
They always are.
Yeah. Like I've said 100 times, chance that to see some needlework, artwork that you will not have a chance to see because it's in Australia.
Yeah, we can't travel anytime soon.
No. We are locked in. We are locked in, yep. So so join us for that at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the YouTube channel. And wetalkfiber.com/YouTube gets you there. Unless you use that within Facebook, as I learned the hard way, it doesn't work. So just go to a browser, put in wetalkfiber.com/YouTube, and it will take you to the page. Sometimes I want to take the Facebook people and just shake them.
They just like to make life a little more complicated.
Like, come on, you know, whatever. So I do that. Boy, that was Sunday was fun. Fiber Talk Meditates was fun.
Yes, that was great. I am enjoying this meditative stitching. Just quietly stitching on a piece that does not require that I look at a graph, that I think about anything, that I just stitch away.
I've never done anything like that, and I'm working on, I'm doing the basket weave, Evelia's basket weave thing. And once I got the grid established, got the colors established, then it was really fun yesterday, and I kept doing it after the show, or not yesterday, but Sunday. I kept doing it after the show, right through the evening football game. Just sit there, just moving the needle. And that was really, it was relaxing. I was just getting to the point where it was starting to get boring, but then it was time to go to bed, so who cares? But but yeah, that's, you just don't think about it, and you just keep going. It's amazing how much ground I covered. Just doing it.
Right. And mine is a little more complicated. It's that floral pattern. But I know what I have, you know, I pre-worked some of it. So I did the half of the cross. And so all I was doing is going back and filling it in. And it's just, it's going quickly. It's relaxing. I don't want to really put it down, to be honest. it's just nice.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the other thing is putting it down, because you're making progress. You don't have to think. And it's like a little machine going. And
wait,
if I keep going on this, I could finish it. And so I'm forcing myself to stop because we got 6 more weeks of meditative stitching. And so it's supposed to last that long, but, and I've got other things. We all have other things, but,
We all have other things. Yeah. But the other thing is, I think, you know, she pointed out that, you know, it slows you down. It slows down your, you know, your kind of gets your body rhythm slowed down, but then you feel energized. Like when I did stop, I was like, okay, yeah, I can go take care of my kitchen, go do those dishes that were sitting in the sink. you know, take care of some stuff that I just, you know, I had the energy. It kind of, yeah. You know, Krista's talk at the beginning was really, really good.
Yeah.
And the things she pointed out.
That the one that stuck with me, it makes sense, but it really stuck with me, is that there appears with needlework to be benefit in terms of holding off Alzheimer's and dementia or preventing it. That's because I think I even mentioned that in the show, but it was for me, wait a minute, all the drugs and research, and you can have an impact on those types of diseases just by stitching? Wow.
Right.
Give me a needle. And
right. And I like it better than crossword puzzles, you know. That's the other thing they always say to do. But I'm not a crossword puzzle person, so this is like, yes, an excuse to stitch. I'm staving off dementia.
Yeah, exactly. It's for my health. Just leave me alone.
My health.
But that's pretty neat, because the articles, and if you go to WeTalkFiber.com, the reference material that Krista used, articles and 2 books, are all linked there under the first of the Fiber Talk Meditates shows. And just about all of them referred to knitting as what they'd used did their research on, but what, you know, that doesn't matter. It's still that kind of activity. And I'm sure it was knitting because it was easy to find knitters to do research on. But so that really isn't relevant, but you know, they're all linked there, so there's plenty of research and 2 books. One about how called rest, and how you get much more done if you're rested. Arianna Huffington was one of the co-authors.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, Huffington Post.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Lost you there. Sorry.
All right.
I mean, she's obviously an accomplished lady, but I did not expect to see her name show up on that. But and that's that old thing. Of course, as you get older, if you get more rest, you'll be more effective during the day. Yeah, you try getting a good night's sleep. Yeah, give it a shot. Yeah, you do.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to get some exercise in, so you're tired. So when you go to bed,
Right.
That's the thought, at least. But yeah, I actually checked out those books from my local library. Hopefully they'll through interlibrary loan. I was really interested in reading them, because it sounds like a good thing to peruse.
Yeah, just to get a better understanding of what goes on. But it was it Flow and Rest were the 2 titles. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So those are all linked. The links to Amazon for the books, and then links to the articles that Krista referred to, because no doubt good reading. But it's all all kind of ties together, and it obviously comes down to, as you get older, stay active, keep your mind working, don't become a couch potato, and it pays off. And yeah, exercise, move during the day.
Right. Move during the day, but you know, take some time to do something stitching, productive.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of nice to see something develop too under your needle.
Right.
The needle and thread.
Right. Well, when she was talking about how when you start stitching and as the time goes on, that what your mind goes through. And see, when I'm riding my bike, on the road, not the mountain bike. The mountain bike on trails, you got to pay attention at every turn, because if you don't, you'll be into a tree or a pile of rocks. But and this is what I love about my road bike, is when I do that, like if I go out for 3 hours, there'll be an hour where my mind is just churning through all kinds of things, you know, figuring out things, you know, solving a problem, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden that stops. Like you go through it all, it stops. And then I just go into this blank mind state. And for the next hour or 2 hours, depending on how far I plan to ride, my mind is just in absolute neutral. And I'm just riding and enjoying the nothingness. That's when it's interesting, because that's when my speed picks up and my endurance picks up. Like if I do a short run, like 20-mile short run, by the time I get home, I'm just starting to get loose and just starting to get comfortable. But so I'll do a 20 miles because I have to get back. But it's right. somewhere 30, 35 miles, the legs, everything just relaxes. And then it's just the motion. And, right. and so relaxed. So when she was describing that, that's what happens on the bike when I'm riding. And then as I was doing the meditative stitching into the afternoon after the show, that same thing was happening. And it was very cool. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You just get into that rhythm. And if nothing else is going on around you, you just, you know, you kind of just let your mind go. I used to do it that way when I did marathons. You know, you get into a certain spot and you're like, okay, we're just chogging out the miles.
Yep. So you know that feeling, you know that point where it just shifts off. Everything just shifts off, shuts off, and you're just running. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. And you get a rhythm going. It's just your feet. And I never wore headsets or listened to music or anything. I just liked hearing the sounds around me.
Yeah.
And you get into that, and it just all of a sudden, all those problems are gone, or you find a solution to a problem that's been chewing on your mind, or you're like, okay, I can let this go.
Yep.
Yeah. Get that spot.
Yep.
Get that spot.
Okay. So, you know the feeling. Yep. Cause that's what happens to me. Yep. It's just everything just shuts off and you're just riding. Yep. Just going. And yeah, you're tired at the end, but who cares? You know, That's what a night of restless sleep is for, is to recover. So. Yeah. Okay. So you know that. Yeah. You know that feeling. Yeah. And that's where that's got to be where the benefits come in. It's like she said, the dopamine and your heart rate drops and blood pressure, everything. Yeah. Because, that's when I hit that spot on my bike, the heart just evens out. The heart rate just evens out, the circulation, you can feel it all. Everything's in sync and you just keep going. And I don't use music either. A lot of people ride with music. And I bought probably the best headphones I've ever owned is a set of bone conduction headphones, where they don't go in your ear, they go right in front of your ear, and the sound is transmitted through the bones in your head. And the idea is then you can hear what's going on around you, which you can. So you can listen to whatever is going through those, but you can hear around you. And one of the reasons I bought them was to have music on when I ride. And I did it a few times, but you know what? I don't like it. I don't want it. I don't want it in my head. I just want to ride. Yeah.
Even now when I jog, it's just like, okay, I like listening to the wind, to the birds, you know, I want to hear the cars passing me.
Yep.
You know, I don't ever listen to anything. And I still, even with the short distances, it's that little bit of endorphin rush where you're going. But even with 3 miles now, I find, you know, you get to a spot, you know, when you coming back, you're like, okay, yeah, I got some of those thoughts worked out. Got something.
Yep. Yeah.
A little bit calmer. Not the same as running marathons, though, but.
Yeah, that's a little different. That's a little different. How many marathons have you run?
Can't do those miles. I did 5.
Holy smokes. Wow.
Five.
Wow. That's cool. Man. Yeah,
it was fun. But I was slow. I was slow. I was never fast. I was a slow runner.
Hey, did you cover 26.2 miles? Yeah. Yes, yeah, you
every
did.
Time.
Who cares how fast? Who cares how fast? Yeah. How many people can
I
line up and
before.
Did that? Yeah. Yeah, no.
Yeah. No.
There's no. There's racing, but there's also just covering those miles. Yeah. It's like
getting the miles done.
Yeah, cuz the equivalent of that, well, not the equivalent, but certainly close to it is century rides on bikes where you go ride 100 miles in a day. And mm-hmm. yeah, they're professionals, but they're racer guys who go out and knock that off in, you know, 4 hours. Well, I can do it in 5 hours if I'm in peak shape and doing that kind of distance. I can do it in 5 hours, but yeah, I don't care how fast you do it. I rode 100 miles, you know, in a
right,
day.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, yep. Can you do that and walk away from it? Yes. 26.2 miles.
Right.
I can. Yep. That's right.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Still alive.
Yeah. 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 The trick is to walk away. The trick is to walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Still standing.
Yeah. I've had a couple century rides where I barely walked away, but, yeah. Heat and humidity. Ooh, boy. So,
oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. There's benefit there and there's benefit in that stitching. And so every Sunday now, 6 more weeks, we're going to do that 2:00 Eastern time on the YouTube channel. So join us. Next week, right. Deb DeCrane is going to teach us some breathing techniques, and Sherry will be back to revisit the exercise, the simple exercises she did, stretching. So that'll be Sunday at 2:00. So join us for that. And then we just stitched. Well, we just turned the sound off and stitched. It was fun.
Right. It was nice.
Yeah. It's just nothing. Just nothing.
Just nothing. Yeah.
Yep.
And right. Kim still has kits?
Hmm?
Kim still has kits?
Yep. Yep. Cosmo thread kits and others. And Krista still has DMC kits for the basket weave thing. Yes. Order them up. Order them up. That Cosmo thread. Oh, I like that thread. Yeah. That's good.
I can't think if I've ever stitched with that one. I don't think I have. I shouldn't say that. I've stitched with so many things.
Yeah. No, I like it. It's got a nice smooth feel to it. It holds up well, over the course of the strand. It holds up well. I like the colors, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. Is it, you know, 5 levels better than DMC? No. But is it a really nice cotton thread? A nice 6-stranded cotton thread? Yes, very nice. Yeah, I really like it. And I'm doing 2 strands on 30 count. 2 strands on 30 count. And for this one, I just decided. Yeah, I just gave myself permission. I'm just going to stitch. I'm not going to worry about railroading, to get the threads to lay flat or anything. I'm just going to stitch it and just for the motion of stitching. And, mm-hmm. It's going to look fine. It'll be fine. But I just gave myself permission to just do it. And
right.
Yeah.
And I tried to do mine without a hoop, and I'm not ripping out the section I did that I did without a hoop. And I was like, nope, back to the hoop. The hoopless didn't work for me. I need that hoop.
Yeah. I got to have a hoop too. I am people who do that in hand. I'm so impressed. I really am.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since they get their tension right. It's like, yeah. I'm looking at these, like it might end up coming out. Who knows? It depends on how bad it bothers me.
It eats at her for days and finally out it comes. Yeah.
Right. It's just, as long as I don't look at that one, it's fine.
Oh, we got to get you a new hoop. It looks like your hoop is delaminating, or is that just the color of it?
That's how it came. It's a Hardwick Manor, and it came with that. It came that way. And I was like, is it supposed to be this way?
No.
No.
I saw that picture the other day. We got to pass the hat to get Beth a hoop here. She's. We got to get a few nickels together and buy you a hoop. Man, this is terrible.
All right. And you know, I like the small size. So this is a tiny one. I guess it's a 4-inch.
Uh-huh.
I'm Yeah, I thought, well, I had to buy myself another one that's a slightly bigger, but
Well,
no.
go a little crazy and get one that where the wood isn't coming apart. All right, everybody put a buck together and send it to Beth so she can buy a hoop.
Right, it'll be on my list next time I place an order.
Well, you
And
know,
we'll
it's
see what I get.
interesting. It's in, you know, 4-inch hoop. Now, I was stitching last night on an 8-inch or maybe even a 10-inch. But Jean Lee at the Attic, that's what she stitches with is a four-inch hoop all the time. And I said to her one time, well, why such a small hoop? She said, I don't know. And she holds it in her hand, and she says, it's
Right.
just that's what's comfortable for me. And so she just moves that 4-inch hoop around the piece. And of course, she does giant samplers. But yeah, everything is done with a 4-inch hoop held in hand. And of course, hers is like that 5660 count. I have no idea how she sees it without a magnifier. I mean, she has, you know, glasses, which I'm sure have extra magnification in. But yeah, she just doesn't just in a 4-inch hoop. Yeah. And then you think, well, yeah, that you can stuff in your purse, you know, shove it in a bag and shove it in your purse and go. But yeah. So.
And this is, I'll tell you what, I always use when I do, like if I'm doing my crazy quilting stuff, this is the size I have it in a plastic, and those and this, so this Hardwick Manor, like it holds much better than those plastic ones. And I'm like, yeah, I should get another one of these so I can have another one around, because I'm always changing projects. So I'll get one. I'll have to make sure. I don't have a local needle workshop, so I have to order it online. So
Okay,
kind of
after the
look
show,
at
I'm
it. They just
calling.
sent
After the show, I'm calling Kim, and I'm going to get you a hoop or two. Poor Beth, boy, a delaminated.
Oh,
Boy, no, this is so sad.
it came this way. It came this way.
Should have sent it back. Oh,
I
this
guess
is
I
such a
could.
sad tale. She.
I hate to send things back. It worked. I put my little tape on it. It works fine. Gary.
Let's get. Okay, we have to
Okay,
come
I'm gonna have to
together as
send.
a community and get Beth a decent hoop. This is so sad.
Sad, it is sad state of
Oh,
affairs.
man.
Well, at least it's better than the plastic thing I was using.
I can't do those plastic hoops. I've never liked any of the plastic hoops. And I've used the
Well,
ones that have that spring, you know, that. The two thumb
I don't.
things, I can't, I
No.
hate them.
No, I don't like those. I like the ones where you screw them in and it's got that lip on it. And those are the ones, like if I'm when I was teaching for a crazy quilt class, those are the ones I suggested because they're as tight as you could get. I wasn't going to suggest a Hardwick Manor hoop for that class because those are
Yeah.
too pricey for most people. But this, and they work pretty well, but yeah, these are much better. These Hardwick Manor hoops, wonderful.
So yeah, but yeah, don't get one out of the discount bin like Beth, where it's all delaminated and coming apart. Get a real one.
Get a real one.
Oh, this is just so sad. Oh, I just feel awful now.
That don't you just and all the shops are going to wonder who sent Beth that hoop. Oh,
Kim,
I
if you
know
hear
where I
this
got.
thing, put some hoops in the mail to Beth.
Oh, I'll just have to look and see. Okay, what else do I need to order? What else do I need to order? What else needs to go on my little list?
Here, go crazy. Get three sizes of hoops. Go nuts. Get a 4, 6, and 8-inch hoop. Yeah, come on, Beth. You can do it. You can do it.
I can't, but see, I own, but I have other sizes. I have some of those. What are they? Princess hoops or the ones everyone was collecting? I actually have some of those, and I don't use them. I use this little 4-inch hoop. It's my favorite. Make me sad. Make me want to. The poor hoop. It has feelings. It's not its fault. It was delaminating. It's not hurting anything.
From the land of misfit hoops. Well, hey, you know, if it's your favorite and you like it, then you just keep using it, you know, if it works. But
Thanks,
it
Gary.
just looks sad. It really did.
I'll bring out my pig coop next time.
No, no, no. Now, see, this becomes your signature. This has becomes, oh, that's best work. I can tell. The hoop.
The hoop.
I don't need to see your name. It's just the hoop. That's Beth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have to pass the hat.
Yeah.
So this one you pulled out, this quote, has really got me thinking. Amarta Harvey, the Adventures in Arting podcast. I got to listen to that.
Yeah. It's Julie Fayfam Balzer's podcast. But it's most of the things I do, I don't think you need special talents for. It's just knowing the process. Things that have taken me maybe years to figure out, but they're so simple when you break them down into small steps. And she was talking about doing stamp carving. That's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought when I saw that quote, I said, oh, that pertains to needlework. You know, some of the things we were doing, like Royal Garden or even the hearts, you know, I'm working on mine a little every day, and it's just doing one little section, doing one little part of it. If you don't look at it like, oh, I can't. Well, I'm Royal Garden. You just do one little stitch. You follow the numbers up at one, down at two. You break it down to those small steps. And then when you're done, you have this beautiful piece that's very, you know, very complicated, but it's just one little step at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah, that the phrase is just knowing the process. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. I think sometimes, you know, people will see, I take stitching out in the wild, you know, I'll be stitching somewhere and people are like, oh, what are you doing? And I mean, I'm stitching, I'm cross stitching or doing surface embroidery, or I even take some needlepoint out sometimes if I, you know, and they'll be like, that's really neat. Oh, but that's too hard. I can't do that. And I'm like, yes, you can. It's just up at one, down at two. There's directions, just do a little section, just do a little bit. And it's so relaxing. It's so fun to see something when you're done.
Yeah.
See a project kind of develop across a canvas or a piece of cloth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Things that have taken me maybe years to figure out, but they're so simple when you break them down into small steps. And, you know, yeah, not only a stitch, but also a project. Like you said, you know, just do this little part here. And you might have to do it a couple times, but then when you see the steps, then you're off and running with that one. And you just build from there.
Right. Right. And people who are learning, you know, it's, you know, you're learning anything. You've got to take those little baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I always hate it when people compare their work to somebody else's. Oh, you know, mine doesn't look as good as yours. Well, how long have you been stitching? You know, is this your first project? Is this your first time with this technique?
Right.
You know, don't compare yourselves to others. You know, just, you know, it's yours. No one, the needlepoint police don't live in your house. Needlework police don't live there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's just it. Who was it? The Russian, young Russian lady,
Amina? I know who you're talking about.
Amina.
Yes.
Yes. Where she was talking about being intimidated by talent and how mm-hmm. you really shouldn't be, that, you know, they've just done it longer. You just need to dig in. And
right.
Yeah.
Right. And like you've said, you were talking about like counted canvas work, how, you know, people are intimidated by it. It actually is easier in a lot of ways than cross stitch because you've got these big grids you can see. And you cover a whole lot more ground with the needlepoint stitches generally than you do with cross stitches. So it goes a lot faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it looks complicated. It looks complicated because they use a lot more fancier threads So the fibers are different, and they use different stitches. Not always. Some of them are used in cross stitch, but, you know, and again, it's just learning those stitches, taking a little bit of a time, just trying it, seeing if you like it. I was surprised by how many people we got to join with the Royal Garden piece.
That's definitely, people would classify that as a large, complex piece. But mm-hmm. no, not if you do this stitch in the center and this stitch that goes around it and this one. No, it's just a lot of it. And take your time and learn. There's plenty of instructions. And that's, you know, these days, there's plenty of help, too.
Right.
You're just a computer away from all kinds of help. And
right. Right. And it is just breaking it down a little at a time. Now, so when you stitch, like if you've got a big project, this is something I've been wanting to ask you. So do you break it down mentally? Do you say, okay, I'm going to try to get this much done. I'm going to work up till I get to this point before I work on a different project? Or do you just work on one project to get it all the way done? How do you process those?
We all know I don't do that. But no, because see, process is the word. For me, I'm a process stitcher, for whatever that phrase or description means. I enjoy the process of it. And I really don't focus on getting it done. Yeah, I want them to get finished. I'd like to get one or two finished of the stack that I have going. But it's not in my head. What's in my head is doing it. And some days it's doing it, just picking away at it, just because my mind's on other things. And then other days, like Sunday with the meditative thing, I was just a little machine. But it's the process of doing it, and it's the process of the different stitches and different threads and learning how they behave and just picking up that knowledge, that's what I enjoy, and trying to get it just right. That's what I enjoy. And eventually, you know, you pick away at them and they get done. Though Margaret would would wonder when that's going to happen. But no, it's the process for me. And I don't think about like Royal Garden. I don't think about I'm going to do this much. No, I just go. And I just, like for Debbie Raleigh there, I just follow her directions, do this, then do this, and I just keep going. And eventually we'll get there. But no, I don't set little goals for myself or anything. I just stitch, and if I'm into it, fine. If I'm not into it, fine. And there are days when, you know, there's unfortunately a lot of days where I just don't stitch at all. You know, I'll, like at night when I finally have a chance to do it, I know I'm too tired, and if I stitch, I'm going to end up tearing it out tomorrow. So I just don't even bother. But now I will say, those evenings where I'd like to stitch, now that we've been exposed to this meditative stitching, I'm going to keep one of those going. Because that's the kind of thing where those nights where if I sat down and tried to do a Jessica, I'd just be wasting thread. But I could sit down and do a meditative thing and make some progress. And so that's given me another weapon. So I'm kind of excited about that. But no, I just don't look at it that way at all. No, never have.
Right. So you don't ever count stitches or anything like that?
No, heavens, no, no.
See, and I don't either. I tried. I actually at one point tried timing myself. Okay, seeing how long I spent on a project, because I kept being asked that. How long do you take that you? I'm like, I really don't care. You know,
right.
But I do like on Gay Ann's Heart. I have a lot of projects going, but I want to move that one forward. I don't want it to linger.
Mm-hmm.
So I will set like kind of a 15-minute timer. And I'll work on it for 15 minutes every day. I think yesterday was the only day I didn't work on it. And that's all right. That's okay. I'm not going to beat myself up if I don't work on it.
Yeah.
But by doing that, you can see progress on a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like to see things get done. So I have to keep moving the ball forward. And I have some things that I need to get done for my guild. So it's like, oh, they're not as interesting anymore. So I have to force myself to work on it. Like, okay, I'm over with this project. Let's just get it done. But I find that, you know, if I set a timer and I work on something for like 15 minutes, then it's satisfying. It, you know, I can see a piece making progress.
And yeah.
I think that's the process for me. And I have to have like a hard project, something that requires lots of mental focus, and then kind of a medium project where it's just big and it's just, you got to plug away in it. And then like a smaller one that, you know, pick up and leave anytime you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always have three going, at least three going at a time.
Yeah.
At least three.
Yeah. No, I mean, I of course tend to big complex projects. I love those. That's just the complexity and the challenge is what appeals to me. But right. I call it mindless stitching. I need to have something that just doesn't take any thought. And right. You just can just go, because you need that. I think if you're going to do complex projects, I think that you need that mental escape. You need to be able to do stitching that requires zero thought, because if not, you'll burn yourself out. Everything takes effort. Everything, you know, if you're doing complex stuff, everything takes concentration and effort. And after a while, you just grow weary of it. So you need that.
Right.
You need that other end of the spectrum. Yeah.
Well, and I know Dan's getting ready to sell her Patriot. I think it's on Thursday, right?
Yep, tomorrow. Yep, tomorrow, 8 yeah. o'clock a.m. Pacific time. Yes.
Well, I think that's the nice thing about some of her bigger pieces. It's once you get some of the, what you consider the harder thing in, like you put the face in, you've got tons of background stitching to do. And that's kind of like, it's almost, it is meditative. Once you get where you're supposed to go, you're just going along. It's nice and it doesn't require much thought. And sometimes in the bigger projects, if you can break that down, like you have a section that's very, very difficult, mm-hmm. and you work on that, but then maybe sometime, yeah, I'm tired. I don't feel like fiddling with all that area. You have another area that's less complicated. I would think some of the spot motif samplers would be like that, where there's a lot of color changes in one area. But then there's other areas where maybe you're just putting in a border and you know where that border goes and you're just kind of like filling it in.
Yeah. Well, Krista West mentioned that finding meditative stitching within a more complex project, and that there are areas where you're just filling in. Gay-Ann's hearts are one. Where she always frequently has you put an underlying color. And like on the Purple Mountains Majesty of her Patriotica hearts, you outline the mountains and then it's just tent stitch to fill it in. Well, there's a meditative aspect to that, because heaven knows there's no mental capacity needed to do tent stitch. And you're not doing basket weave tent stitch. You're just covering the cloth. And, so there's meditation in that. And, then you get that done and then we start to go to work. But, exactly. You can find meditative stitching, background and needlepoint. Yeah. Just filling in. Yep.
Right. Right. And then cross stitch is that way too. I think those, you know, the samplers people are doing, and the houses are so popular right now. I think if you just did your outline and then just you went and filled those babies in, you know, it's just, it's something that doesn't require any thought. You just stitching away.
Yep.
And there's something relaxing about that too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was,
but you don't break down your projects at all.
No.
Like,
no. Mm-mm. Oh. Never have. Never have. I just start where, if I'm going to start it, like a cross stitch piece, upper left corner, and I just go. If it's a counted canvas thing where, for instance, well, Debbie Rowley, where like this one, you start in the middle, then I take her advice, and I've tried to ignore her advice in the past and pay the price for it. Debbie says start in the middle, you start in the middle, and then I just go. And I don't break it down at all, never have. To me, it's just the process that you're going through of doing the various stitches and doing the stitching, and at some point, it'll be done. It'll end. You'll put the last stitch in, and then it's over with. And I don't even think about them. It's weird. Yeah, I don't even think about them as something to get finished. I'd like to hold one up one day and say, yeah, I put the last stitch in this thing. No, I don't. Now, like Hannah Longstreth, like I'm moving along. I enjoy that one. I'm moving along fairly well in that. And, I can see I'm almost, I think almost to the midpoint
really?
Yeah, because I just enjoy doing that one, but see, it has a characteristic to it in that there's these individual motifs. So you get that satisfaction of finishing, but, still for me, I never have looked at it that way. And some people it's a mission to finish. And, that's what works for them. And no, right. Never have. And I don't care what happens to it afterwards. Like if I finish a piece, I really don't have any plans to finish it. I don't care. Marga's the one who cares. And so, okay, this piece is finished. Oh, good, good. Cause I have a spot for that on the wall and we're getting it framed like this. And then, good for you. Knock yourself out. I don't care. I really don't, it sounds cavalier, but I just really simply don't care. It was the process of doing that and I got it done and I'm satisfied with it. And the rest is immaterial to me. So,
well, and I tend to be that way. And I was trying to do something with I was piloting for, ANG for a while. So, you had to crank those babies out. And they weren't very big pieces, but I was like, okay, now what do I do with them? I can't really show them on social media because they're pilot class.
Right,
I'm a pilot. Yeah. But I actually made them into notebooks and things just to move them, notebook covers or something, just to move them out of my house because it was like, okay, this is crazy. I've got too many things finished because I don't necessarily want to frame everything.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the same way on some things. Other things I'm like Anne's heart. I guess that's why I'm working on it for 15 minutes every day because I want to get it finished and start on the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can get them all done and it'd be nice to have them ready to display next year because they are so pretty.
Yeah.
But,
Now, I wouldn't mind having those done and finished into hearts. But I'm pretty sure I'll reach a point after the second one where I'll even lose interest in that. And I'll just stitch them because it's the experience of stitching her designs, which I enjoy. And
right.
I'm sure they'll all get finished. And then there'll be four squares of Congress cloth with stitching on them sitting in a drawer somewhere. And if Marga wants them finished, they'll get finished. I don't care.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And in hers, I think what I like about hers, although they'll be similar to Stitch, my guess is seeing you work on the Purple Mountains one, it's just enough variety in them to make them interesting too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's not, it's not like you're going to go do the next one and feel like you're repeating. No.
Right.
No.
Right.
They're very different, yet they all go together. And I like the threads she uses, the silk threads that she uses. Mm-hmm. And when I did her Lady Edith from the Downton Abbey series, was the first time I'd ever used pepper pot silks. And oh boy, I really like those; they're very nice.
Right.
And so, in my head is to start another one of those simply to use the pepper pot silks. Because I just so enjoyed using them. They just stitch nice. They look nice. And again, just for that experience and the process of doing that, not necessarily because I'm determined to get all four done so they can all hang on a wall. I don't care. I just don't. So.
Right. Right. That, sometimes it's just fun to try the different threads. I think that's the other thing I like about needlepoint versus, you know, cross stitch. It's cross stitch. You don't have a whole lot of thread variety in there.
Right.
But with needlepoint, and I'm working with Petite Frosty Rays right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot how much I hate that thread. Because you've got to do something with that end or it frays like crazy. And uh-huh. I was just like, okay, it's a small little section I'm doing. It's not going to take me long. And I was like, this has got to come out. I got to put some glue at the end of this baby and get this fixed because it's just, for those who don't know, we used to call it pantyhose for mice because it's like a tube. sort of.
No, I have not heard that, but that's good. Okay.
Yeah. And this one, because it's got a little shiny thread in the middle of it. It's pretty. It's a pretty thread, but it's, oh my goodness. I just despise that thread. A neon rays, I can stitch with all the live long day, but this stuff, it frays.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a pain in the butt. Looks really great. When you get it in, looks really great, but it is a first-class pain in the butt. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. But it, you know, to get the look you want, to get that look on my canvas, I've got to use that thread.
Right.
So it's worth it, you know, to play with it, to mess with it, whatever you need to do. But I think that's fun with needlepoint is that it has so many different – there's so many different fibers. And I've used that pepper pot one, like maybe once or twice, probably on a Gay Ann design. And it is a nice fiber. It is a nice fiber to use. It has a nice feel. But,
And I don't know why people don't use it more. Because you don't see it pop up very often. I mean, the only place I've seen it consistently is in Gay Ann's pieces. And I don't know why, because it really is just beautiful. The colors are rich. It stitches so nice. It really is very nice thread. Yeah.
I'm wondering how many thread colors there are of it. You know, how much color there, varieties of color there are.
That may be why it doesn't get used as much as there may not be. I can't speak for it because I haven't studied, but that may well be the case. There's just not the range and the subtlety and color changes for most designers, but but you know, for the geometrics that Gay Ann's using them in, it works. I don't know. And they may write to us and say, well, we only have 600 colors. What do you want? You need 800. What's your problem? But
that's your problem, people.
So I just simply don't know, but it is lovely stuff. It really is. Yeah. It's interesting how, when you do different threads and do enough of them, you start to form those opinions mm-hmm. where you do a whole project in a Varissois or Petite Frosty Rays. you really get those opinions. But then like Petite Frosty Rays, like you said, you to get that look there, it's not like you can go substitute a different thread for that. It doesn't exist. And you gotta suck it up and use it. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You don't have a choice. And even some people, they just don't like the neon rays because mm-hmm. it's slick, it slides out. You've got to, treat it differently. But it has such a nice sheen to it.
Right.
I don't know. I like it. But.
Yeah. Well, and some of that stuff that, a lot of that Rainbow Gallery stuff that is accent type things that give a look you can't get any other way. You suck it up, but you also, for me, all right, this stuff's going to slip out. I've got to have to just make up my mind to take my time, make sure it is latched down hard before I do that first stitch. So it's not going anywhere. And when I get done, make sure if I have to weave it 18 times to get it to, so it won't move, then that's what I have to do. And just take your time because the end result will be visually very nice. And so you just do it. and
just do it.
And know that other areas you're going to be able to go faster because it'll be a cotton purl and you'll be able to just burn through it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now that's interesting there. You just break it down into small steps and just keep that, you know, keep that in mind that none of it is, because I've never believed that, yeah, you can make a case for beginner pieces versus something else like stump work. Now I would stand up and say, yeah, there's beginner stump work and you probably ought to try that before you go on to the advanced stuff, without a doubt. But most needlework, I don't know, just jump in and do a little bit and it'll come together and you can do what would be considered an advanced project as a first time out. Yeah, I think you can. But just don't look at it as the whole thing. But yeah, stump work, yeah. Yeah, you probably want to take a run at a starter piece.
Oh, that and gold work, I think.
Yeah.
You know, things that, gold work with the thread painting and that, a smaller piece to start to see if you like it.
Yeah.
It might be a good choice, but yeah.
Yep. And see, thread painting, that's an interesting one because there's very, very little I've done of it. There's so much flexibility within that. There's a basic technique, but there's so much flexibility. This area is too light. Well, put a couple more threads in. It'll be all right.
Right. And I've only, I think I've just done one where I've done with silk thread painting and, it didn't come out as well as I had hoped. But yeah. Now looking at it a few years later, I'm like, okay, I can see where I made a mistake. Now I haven't done much more of it. But again, that's one that I think if I really wanted to get better at it, really, really wanted to improve, I would have to start just concentrating on that technique because that's the only way on that one. Because it becomes almost, you'll look at it and you're like, you know, okay, I've got to add a little more here or it's not blending correctly or I've got to take, what surprised me on that is how long your stitches need to be to start off.
Mm-hmm.
And I always take stitches. And so for me, just getting over that hurdle is a huge one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you'd have to decide, okay, I want to learn thread painting. I want to get better at it. I want to really improve. You'd have to kind of concentrate on that and not do what I do, which is try a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Well, and I think with thread painting, if you wanted to get better at it, good at it, at least proficient at it, that's one where you just take a piece of cloth and just some thread and just say, all right, I'm going to go from dark red to light pink and see if I can transition smoothly from one to the next. And you could just have a fun little challenge just doing that. Don't try to make anything. Like, don't try to do a Trish Burr bird out of it. But just say, I'm going to make this box here and start at this end, dark red, and can I get to light pink and have a smooth transition. You know, that would just be a fun thing to do. Just see. And I think you would learn a lot just doing that. And hold it back, you know, all right, now hold it out at arm's length. Oh, yuck.
That didn't blend.
Yeah. That was a bit of a rough jump. But then go back and fill that in. See if you can fix it. You know, don't tear it out, but just go and fill it in and see if you can fix it. Put some transition in there. Yeah. I'm not going to do that tomorrow, but
I think you mentioned Trish Burr, her book, Color Confident, mm-hmm. and she gives you those ranges.
Yeah.
You know, I've always thought that would be a fun book to kind of work your way, at least a few of the color palettes that you already know you like. You know, you're a blue person. If you said, okay, I'm just going to take her blues, do one of those and do that. It would be a great exercise.
Yeah.
And practicing shading.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That book would be excellent for that kind of an exercise. Excellent. Just to do that. Just some DMC thread. Cause that's usually what she uses. Just DMC for all of her stuff. So you just pull it out of your stash and, That would be excellent to take that book. You could spend hours just going through that book, just doing that kind of a thing. Yeah.
Right. And it's just again, like anything, it's just a matter of taking the time to practice it. I think, mm-hmm. You're not going to be an expert the first time out. It's just not going to be.
No.
Have to practice it.
Yeah.
And learn. It's just, but those small steps, it's the small breaking it down, saying, okay, I really want to learn this. I'm going to take that small step. I'm going to practice in this little block and I'm just going to work on it.
Yep.
See, but I don't think I could do a little square. See, that would quickly become too boring for me. I would almost have to do a flower or something so I could say, okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It looks like something than a square.
Yeah,
square, yeah. Or I'd be like, ah.
Yeah. But see, that's probably the difference between you and me is for me, just to accomplish a transition, shape regardless, who cares about the shape? For me would be the fun challenge. But then, yeah, if you've got to have a pedal that goes from dark in the center to light in the outside, well, then that's what works for you, yeah.
Right.
Because I'm not even going to pretend that out of the gate I could stitch a bird like Trish Burr.
No.
That just amazes me. Every time she puts one of those things up, your mind first wants that to be a photograph, and then mm-hmm. you see the T bird down at the underneath the bird. Holy smokes! How does that woman do it?
Right. And yeah. Just, the shape she gets. It's like, oh.
She gets it all.
But I know that would.
She gets it all to flow. I mean, she just gets it all to the painting, the threads all go in the right angle at the right curve. And it's just amazing what she can do. And she's not the only one, but she is certainly one of the best at, it makes the head, and then the feathers, and she brings those feathers out like they are the real thing, and wow.
Right. And it looks so realistic. Looks so realistic.
And the first time I saw her stuff, I thought the bird's eye was a bead she put in. But no, she just does that with thread too.
No. And I'm still surprised she does it with, it's mainly DMC, I think, almost exclusively, and it just, and a piece of cloth, and what a great entry level. Because mm-hmm. and I really think you're right. I think for me, and I have one of her, I think I've got one of her miniature books, which has smaller designs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I really ought to trace one of those and just practice one of my needle painting with one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it doesn't come out, I wouldn't throw it away. I would just throw it in with my stash for crazy quilting, because it would work for something like that, and I could just use it to cover a spot that I needed covered. But it would be good practice.
And she is an excellent example of, no, you don't need expensive silks. No, you don't need this. You don't need that. You just need some basic embroidery cloth and DMC thread and a needle, and create amazing art. And you don't need a Varissois or any of those things. Just straight DMC. There's enough colors for all of us six times over, and just go. And
Right.
She doesn't. Right. She like I don't know. I don't follow her so closely. I know every piece, but I don't know that she's ever used anything other than DMC. I don't know. Probably has.
I can't think of. That's what I was trying to remember. I don't follow her that closely either, but it seems to me she mainly uses DMC.
Yeah.
She might use silk maybe, but I don't know.
If she does, it's not very often. Yeah.
No.
And that may be a function. Well, she doesn't have to, but also living in South Africa, I don't know how readily available materials are. But even so, who cares? Because, go ahead and get some fancy, expensive silks and try and match what she does. I dare you.
Right.
Yeah,
because you won't need that to get.
Right.
You don't need it to get the look she gets, and it's just so She just does such a fabulous job.
Yeah, she's something else. Yeah. All right. Here we are. An hour has flown by. Mm-hmm. So.
And we didn't get through our list.
No. Yeah, you put together a nice list of things, and we did one of them.
Sorry.
Oh, well. We'll be okay. Sunday's guest, Stephanie Bonneau, Atelier St. Clair. She is an embroiderer, and the main core of her business is tambour hooking. Tambour, what is that?
I thought it's tambour embroidery.
Yeah, embroidery beading. Because the core of her business is high fashion dresses and the embroidery that goes on them, the beading and embroidery that goes on them.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, fascinating world. Okay, so this first hour that, and I, because there's going to be 2 hours. So this will be this month, and the next month we're going to have a second hour because we got through, in this hour, we got through her history, how she got to where she's at now, and some of her experiences. And that in itself was fascinating. She has, she's from England, and she has done a ton of everything. So we got through that. But then when we got done, well, partway through, I realized we were never going to have time to do justice to simply the world of couture, you know, high fashion, runway fashion model dresses. And she's worked for all the big houses, all the big design houses. Name one, she's worked for them. And she's down to now the Paris and the London Fashion Weeks is all she does because they suck up so much time. So she just does those two. And she just did here just 2 or 3 weeks ago the London Fashion Week, which was audiences had to watch by TV, by, you know, internet, whatever. You couldn't be there. So there was no audience, but they did the whole runway thing. She spent 100 hours. She put in 100 hours that week just supporting.
Wow.
Yeah. So she has just too much and she can't do her own business justice. So she's doing two of them. So we're going to come back in November with a second show with her and just talk about that world of what it's like, how those dresses get done, how the design process works and so on and so forth. Cause we just couldn't do it and do it justice. So this Sunday will be Stephanie and we just get to learn about her life. And then we're going to come back and just talk about the fashion world and what it's like to work in that world and do that kind of work, you know, on those one-off dresses that go on those high paid models and, get built in pieces and then get put together. And then, you know, at the show, everybody is stitching and sewing and everything else. So, so it's going to be a two-part thing, one in each month to learn from her. And, quite a world. And
yeah, that'll be fascinating. Yeah. I think that'll be really interesting. I think people are just kind of curious about that kind
of.
What does that take?
Yeah. Yeah, you're never going to do it, but just to hear how it gets done. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
And I asked her, I think I asked her in this thing, I'll spoil a little bit, why tambour, why that technique? It's speed. It's just sheer speed. You can do it so much faster on that tulle cloth with tambour hook. And so it's just speed. Yeah. So it becomes, at some point, it becomes a manufacturing issue. How can we get to this point fastest? Well, that's how you do it. So. So that's coming up Sunday. And then in November, we'll have a second one, with her.
Excellent.
And, it's just so much fun to see into those worlds and learn about.
Right. Them. Right. Something we're never going to do, but yeah, it's just like, get to see, what does it take to put on some of those fashion, those clothes? It just, does she design them then, or does she make them for the designers?
She does. I mean, I can't think right now of a major designer. but obviously they design the dress. And then how does it get embellished? Who does the embroidery work for that? Well, they come to her. She's won, sounds like from what I picked up, she's won, she's on the hot list. And then she creates, I think she, and I'm way over my head, but I think she creates the pieces and sends to them, or creates the parts, the embroidery parts, and then shows up and puts them on the dresses. I'm not quite sure how that all happens. That's what part two is about, is what role does she play? But, she does that stuff, and just go to her site, and the list of houses she's worked for, design houses, is pretty impressive. So, fun.
That'll be an interesting show.
Yeah. So that, so Sunday, and then in November, we'll have the second one, which reminds me, I got to get that recorded with her right away here before I forget all the things we've talked about. But it's just, it's what I want to do. It's what I want Fiber Talk to be, is, you'll never get to do it, but you can at least learn about it. And from a needle worker perspective, not 60 minutes, you got 5 minutes to tell the story, but from a perspective like that.
And that's what makes Fiber Talk so interesting, is we get to kind of peer into worlds maybe we would never be able to see.
That's what I want. That's what it is. You're never gonna none of us is ever gonna go work in that world, trust me. It's just not gonna happen.
Because
just what the career that she has put together just to get to that point, you're just not going to do it. There's just a select few who are going to be able to do that, and have the, have the stick-to-itiveness to get there. And because that's a lot of hours of needlework. So, that's coming up. Yep. All right. And that's Sunday. And then, of course, Sunday's number two of the meditative stitching. Join us for that. Some breathing, some exercise, and then some quiet stitching time. Yep. All right, Beth, that's it. Thanks for listening.